Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning for our 19th anniversary show of Two Jewish is Melina Saval, features editor of Variety, whose article, Too Jewish for Hollywood, demonstrates how Hollywood stereotypes Jews. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. This morning we are celebrating the 19th anniversary of the Too Jewish Radio Show, an accomplishment we are very proud of indeed. Too Jewish has been providing Jewish inspiration, news, humor, music, Torah, and shtick, as well, of course, as interviewing the most important and interesting figures in the Jewish world every single week. We will definitely celebrate our big simcha this morning. But before we complete that, I need to talk about just where our name, Too Jewish, came from, and why this celebration is just a little bit bittersweet today. Too Jewish began with an idea a June day back in the year 2002, when after some casual discussion about maybe I should do a radio show, I was told, "You're starting the first Sunday in August." "Starting what?" I asked. "A one-hour radio show. I booked the first 13-week block." I gulped, and over the next few weeks, started planning the show. Everything came together well. We lined up guests and regular mavens to be on the show, got our first sponsors, figured out how to play music cuts and do jokes with style. But we had a huge problem. We did not have a name for our radio show. At first, we threw out all kinds of possible names. All Jews Considered got a few votes. Fresh Jewish Air didn't get much support. One recommendation was to call the show Chop Liver, so when somebody criticized us, and if Jews are listening, somebody's criticizing, we could say, "What are we, Chop Liver?" My personal favorite was Deli Home Companion, but the lawyers told us we'd get sued by Garrison Keillor. And we do try to listen to our lawyers. They are, of course, Jewish. For a while, we called the Not Yet on the Air show Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel. I mean, it was going to be Jewish, and central to how Jews think about our things is Shema Yisrael. That was my friend Tom Price's suggestion, as I recall. Tom's been with us for the whole of our run. The quote, of course, is from Deuteronomy 6. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Shema Yisrael, one God, indivisible." That was the name of the show. Well, the working name. But every time we told somebody we were calling our new radio show Shema Yisrael, they said the same thing. "That's okay. But it's too Jewish." Or, "Shema Yisrael? That's a good working title, but it's Hebrew. Frankly, it's too Jewish." And after 5 or 6 dozen comments like this, we got the idea that not only was the show title too Jewish, but the show title ultimately had to be too Jewish. I mean, our focus on Too Jewish has always been exploring what it means to be fully Jewish in complicated times. And that's what we've been, Too Jewish, ever since August 4th of 2002. But you see, the great routine about Too Jewish was created by a guy who just died last week, the comedian, author, rabbi, Broadway and TV star, Tony Award and 3-time Emmy Award winner, Jackie Mason. Jackie Mason was 93 years old when he died last week and certainly lived a full, productive, accomplished life. Still, every time I think of Too Jewish, I'm reminded of this amazing routine.
But the Jews, I was always too Jewish. To this day, I have this problem. To this day, half of the Jews who see me get nauseous. He's not for me. Why does he have to sound so Jewish? The last anti-Semites left in the world are the Jews. I never saw a Gentile that said, he can't stand me because I sound too Jewish. If he doesn't like me, it's because he doesn't know what I'm talking about, and that's it. But if a Jew doesn't like me, it's always the same reason. He's so Jewish. Did you ever see a Jew say he can't stand somebody because he's too Italian or too Spanish or too French? You ever hear a Jew say, he's too French for my taste? I don't know. I never heard that. The only people that can't stand are the Jews, and it's only Jews who say it. Why is that? I'm going to stay here till we figure this out. They're embarrassed by anything Jewish. Let's be honest about it. Why do you think Jews cut off their names, their noses? They cut off everything they got. They keep cutting everything. Jewish noses are getting smaller and smaller every year. Pretty soon there'll be no nose at all. What is this embarrassment about too Jewish? Where does this come from? Looks like I have to tell you everything.
Jackie Mason's biography is unique. The son, grandson, and great-great-grandson of rabbis from Minsk, as well as the younger brother of three rabbis, he himself was ordained by the famed Orthodox authority Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, or maybe at Yeshiva University, and then served a couple of synagogues as their rabbi. But he always loved telling jokes, and as he put it,
when you come like I do from a family of rabbis, you know, I have three brothers who are rabbis, as I said on television a couple of days ago, and my father was a rabbi all of his life, and all of his life he always dreamed that all his children would be rabbis. That's all he lived for. So naturally, when it was time for me to become a rabbi, I didn't have the heart to tell my father that I'm not going to, because that's all he lived for, and I didn't want to hurt him. It would have destroyed him if he suddenly found that one son was not a rabbi. So to force myself to become a rabbi wasn't easy, because I didn't have the kind of conviction that a rabbi should have. So I started to perform as a rabbi, and I was very uncomfortable at it, so I started to tell some jokes in my sermons here and there. And as the jokes got better and better, I started to charge a cover and a minimum. And the amazing thing is that as the Gentiles in the area heard about me, more and more Gentiles came to see me. So many Gentiles came that before you know it, there was no room for the Jews. The Jews couldn't get in the building. They couldn't get in there. I became the only rabbi of a Gentile congregation.
Jackie Mason got his start, like so many great comedians, in the Catskills, the Jewish Borscht Belt, then graduated to being a headliner in clubs in New York. He was a hit on the Ed Sullivan Show and the other variety and interview shows, but was often told he needed to lose that accent. He refused, stayed himself, often struggling to make his career really succeed. He recorded comedy albums that became underground hits, and then he really hit it big after creating his Broadway show, The World According to Me, which won a special Tony Award, was filmed for TV, won several Emmys, and the album was nominated for a Grammy. Jackie Mason was an acerbic critic of ethnic difference, hypocrisy, contemporary politics, really anything, always with that same deeply Jewish sensibility. He never worried about who he was offending, but he was bold, incisive, and incredibly funny.
To this day, the greatest pride in every Jewish home is to have a son a doctor, unless he's a little retarded, a lawyer. His mind don't work at all, an accountant.
Jackie Mason got to be a rabbi again later in life. He played the voice of Rabbi Hyman Krastovsky, father of Krusty the Clown on The Simpsons, a role that also won him an Emmy for voiceovers. And finally, Jackie Mason used comedy to enter the realm of the surreal, laughing at our society's many foibles, and, of course, at his own.
I know who I am. For years I didn't know. It's a lucky thing my psychiatrist told me who I am. Well, I walked into his office. He said to me right away, he said, "This is not you." I said, "It's not me? Then who is it? Is it you?" He said, "No, it's not me either." I said, "Then who needs you?" He said, "I'm here to help you look for the real you." I said, "No kidding. If I don't know who I am, how will I know who to look for? And even if I find me, how will I know if it's me? Besides, if I want to look for me, what do I need him? I could look myself. Or I could take my friends. We know where I was. We'll know where to look. Besides, I said to myself, what if I find the real me and I find that he's even worse than me? What do I need him? I don't make enough of myself. I need a partner. 10 years ago, I'd be glad to look for anybody. Now I'm doing good. Why should I look for him? He needs help. Let him look for me. He said, the search for the real you will have to continue. That'll be $25, please. I said to myself, this is not the real me. Why should I give him the $25? I'll look for the real me. Let him give him the $25.
Baruch Dayan Emes, may Jackie Mason now rest in peace. Thank you for the inspiration that helped us name Too Jewish and for helping us to laugh at ourselves in the most Jewish way possible. Too Jewish. We'll say more in a moment on Too Jewish about celebrating our 19th anniversary. And to play us in this morning, here's the start of this classic setting of the Shehecheyanu by Meir Machtenberg. The prayer for all good and new things is sung way back in the day by the Golden Age cantor David Kusevitsky. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who gives us life, sustains us, and brings us to this joyous moment. When we come back on Too Jewish, on this 19th anniversary show, our guest, Melina Saval, features editor of Variety, the Bible of the show business industry, explains how it's possible to be, as her outstanding popular article is titled, Too Jewish for Hollywood, and just how often Hollywood stereotypes Jews. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol. The soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone once again. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning or both. You can email me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson, or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m., Saturday Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me leading them, preceded by Torah study at 9. Our website is beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. We will continue to have services with full music in person and by virtual experience weekly. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. And our wonderful religious school is available in blended formats. Some students live and some who wish can come on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services live and on Facebook, go to www.BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing, newest, and most exciting Jewish congregation and community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Melina Saval is the features editor for Variety, the trade publication of what they call in Southern California the business. She has been an author, heavily involved in the film industry for a long time. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thanks for having me.
So you wrote a terrific article, Too Jewish for Hollywood, we did not give you the title, in which you examine, in a period of soaring anti-Semitism, Hollywood's own hypocrisy about the way it shows Jews. Tell us what prompted you to write this.
Well, I mean, I've been thinking about this issue for a long time, and it's an issue, to be honest, that I've never really not thought about since coming to Hollywood, or even, you know, before that when I just started writing, you know, even in college and I, you know, or even before that, it's just always been an issue that I've been interested in. And why I decided to write it now was because there is, as you know, a surge of anti-Semitism, both on social media and on the ground in real life. And it's just, you know, when I look at TV and film, because this is what I do for a living, I write about TV and film, and I also have a background as a writer writing for film and also books. It's just something that I notice without even having to think about it. I'll notice, oh, this is a Jewish character that's not played by a Jewish actor, or this is a Jewish character played by a non-Jewish actor and done, you know, so in such a deliberately hyperbolic manner, and is this the way they're choosing to express this character's Judaism, by these kind of over-the-top mannerisms and gestures and
kind of too Jewish, you know,
a caricature.
Yeah, really a caricature, that's right.
But I mean, you know, I wrote this in the piece, the reason, you know, I years ago wrote a script, and it was my first script right after graduate school, and the content of the script was about a Jewish family. And I was told immediately, it won't sell if it's a Jewish family. You have to make them non-Jewish. So
you made him Catholic. You made him Irish Catholic, as I recall from the article.
Yeah, I made them Irish Catholic. And as I also said, it wasn't that hard because I grew up in Boston. And, you know, it's got a large influx of you know, there's a big Irish community, and which I love. I love that part of Boston, too. So it was easy for me to do, but at the same time, it, you know, definitely watered down the essence of the script and who these characters were. I did land work off of it, and it did do what my then agent at the time said. You know, I changed them from being Jewish to Catholic, and, you know, it got my foot in the door in Hollywood, and it landed me a script deal, and that was all great. But in retrospect, looking back, you know, it was sort of a terrible thing to ask of a person. And it's also not something that today, with such a key focus on diversity and inclusion, one would probably ask someone of any other ethnic minority.
That's right. And we will talk much more with Melina Saval about, you know, the Jewish origins of Hollywood, but how that hasn't helped in some ways, when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners. with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from 2JewishRadio.com, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store. Is very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. As we noted earlier this morning, we're celebrating the 19th anniversary of 2Jewish today. We have to add, this is actually the 994th individual show of 2Jewish. And sometime around Rosh Hashanah 5782, we will be broadcasting our 1,000th show. Now, I know it's common for radio shows, and of course TV shows and podcasts, to repeat broadcasts during slack times, summer vacations, holidays, and the like. You know, the greatest hits of Johnny Carson or Jay Leno or David Letterman or Jon Stewart or Jimmy Kimmel or Oprah or Jim Rome or Dan Patrick or whomever. But in the entire 19-year run of 2Jewish, we have repeated exactly one show. And that was because of my son Boaz's medical emergency while we were in Europe about 3 years ago. That's it. Otherwise, we have broadcast 19 years of brand new shows every week. Now, I'm not saying my jokes are new. They are called the Old Jewish Joke of the Week for a reason, but the guests and everything else about the show is recorded afresh each week. Because as much as Judaism is based in tradition, it continues to evolve and develop in new and interesting and exciting ways constantly. So thank you for listening to the only Jewish radio show like this in the whole world, and for your support and patronage over the years. It's been a pleasure, always, and we hope to continue to explore the Jewish world for years to come with the same enthusiasm and energy. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And I have to say, it's our anniversary show today, and you've been here through all of it, and wanted to thank you, and we can celebrate together. The champagne will happen after the session, unfortunately.
Okay, but deal. It's always been a pleasure.
We are talking about the Jews of Rome, and we got up through the period in which the Papal States were established by Charlemagne's son Pepin's land grant to the papacy. It's not called the papacy because of Pepin, by the way, in case anybody was unsure. Let's catch up from there.
So, first of all, why was Charlemagne's son in a position to give this? Why did he control this land? And the truth is that lots of the territory in the Italian peninsula was controlled over the centuries by parts of France, parts of Spain, parts of Germany, whatever. And the only thing that was consistently not ruled by France or Spain or Germany was the Vatican, which now has been wrongly characterized as the smallest sovereign state in the world. That honor actually goes to the Sovereign Order of the Knights of Malta and St. John.
There you go.
Which is like one building in the center of Rome. It's way smaller than the Vatican. You blink and you'll miss it. But, all right, so in these centuries of the Dark Ages, when the overall population of Rome was tiny and it was not a commercial center or center of anything much other than the Roman Catholic Church, the Jewish population diminished greatly, to put it mildly. It all but disappeared. There wasn't really a significant community. But those Jews who had been continuously living in Rome since the glory days of the Roman Empire were called Romaniot Jews, just like they were in the Balkans and Thessaloniki, wherever. So
they follow something called Nusach Roma, a specific order of prayer, and they have their own melodies and so on.
So they are like one sush, or one piece of the mosaic that is Roman Jewry. The next sort of major development as Rome rose with the Renaissance and great painters and whatever, which were really from northern Italy, but eventually came to Rome as it grew and flourished, was the Spanish Inquisition, which, although it was sanctioned by the Pope, was never as brutal or as grim in Rome as it was in Spain. So a lot of refugees from the Iberian Peninsula came and settled in Rome following the expulsion in 1492. After the expulsion, Jews from Spain and eventually also from Portugal started arriving in Rome. And there's a famous square in the old Jewish ghetto called the Piazza delle Cinque Scuole, which is the plaza or the square of the five schools. And people often forget that Schul is the German word for school. So we, and the Italians just literally call them schools. So there were these five synagogues in very close proximity, all founded by different communities who settled from Spain. One of those synagogues has been reproduced in the basement of the current Grand Synagogue in Rome. And it's part of the museum, which we can talk about later in another session. But there was, oddly, at the same time as the Inquisition was raging in Spain, there was a flowering of Roman Jewish culture, in part because of two church councils, one in the 13th century and one in the early 16th, that established ghettos, but made a pretty gentle regime for the ghetto in Rome. Yes, it was locked at night, and yes, people had to wear distinctive costumes, but they weren't killed, which is better than many other places in Europe. And the Jews in the ghetto, starting roughly speaking 1550, developed a unique cuisine that exists to this day. And we can talk about the culture they developed and later waves of Jewish immigrants next week.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. This one dedicated to the memory of its author, the late, great Jackie Mason. My grandfather always said, don't watch your money, watch your health. So one day, while I was watching my health, someone stole my money. It was my grandfather. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And while that joke is much better when told using Jackie Mason's Too Jewish accent, well, of course it is. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the Torah portion of Re'eh, fourth Sedra in the book of Deuteronomy, following a sequence of marvelous Torah portions with yet another remarkable text. Re'eh includes one of the most radical statements in the whole of the Torah. Ki yeh v'cha evyon me'achad achecha be'achad sharecha. If there is among you a poor man, one of your brothers, within one of your gates in the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand from your needy brother. Ki fatoach tiftach et yadcha lo. You shall certainly open your hand to him. Give him enough for whatever he lacks, whatever he wants. This commandment is not simply to provide for the needs of the needy, not just to alleviate their suffering, but to give them what they actually want, sustenance, security, a decent life. It is much more than we seek to provide in our own American society, in which the safety net seemingly has as many holes as net. It's more than the social protesters believe that their society should provide. It is a powerful, dramatic statement. Open your hand. Surely, give the needy poor what they ought to have, right here in the Torah. This is part of a strong economic agenda in Deuteronomy. No one is supposed to accumulate great wealth or enormous power, but no one is supposed to be left destitute. Most importantly, our moral obligation is to see to it that none of our brothers and sisters is left without what they need in order to survive. Herein lies a foundational lesson on the morality of giving. Give not only what somebody needs, in your opinion. Give her or him enough to live reasonably and with dignity. Do so in a way that preserves the recipient's dignity. That is the true measure of tzedakah, of living justly and in righteousness. Judaism at heart is pragmatic ethics. We are trained to make the world morally better through practical action. After exploring the Talmudic dictum that even those who receive charity need to give something to those with less, the rabbis conclude that tzedakah is meant to be a percentage of your income, not a hard figure, and that the same percentage, whether 10% or 5% of gross income, or some other number, must be given in good times and bad, even in crazy, strange, weird times. It's true that when there is less income, there'll be a smaller absolute amount donated, but the percentage, and thus the integrity of the individual's morality, will be preserved. So, open your hand. Give a percentage of your gross income to help others. Do so freely, generously, in good times, in tough times, at all times. It's the Jewish thing to do. It's the right thing to do. When we come back on Too Jewish on this 19th anniversary edition, Melina Saval, features editor of Variety, will tell us why she wrote her popular article, Too Jewish for Hollywood. As anti-Semitism soars, Hollywood should address its enduring hypocrisy and hyperbolic caricatures of Jews. And she'll let us know what it's really like to be a committed Jew in today's Hollywood. Find out when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Federal authorities in New York seized 17 items from a Brooklyn auction house that they suspect were looted from their rightful owners during the Holocaust. The scrolls and manuscripts include community ledgers, memorial books, and records from Jewish communities in Romania, Hungary, Ukraine, and Slovakia. Among the items is a valuable record of Jewish burials from the community of Cluj in Romania. The Justice Department began investigating Kestenbaum & Company, the auction house, selling the artifacts back in February after allegations of 21 items being sold without permission or documentation from their rightful owners were in their catalog. Four have already been sold. The scrolls and manuscripts that were illegally confiscated during the Holocaust contain priceless historical information belonging to descendants of families that lived and flourished in Jewish communities before the Holocaust. This office hopes that today's seizure will contribute to the restoration of pre-Holocaust history in Eastern Europe, acting U.S. Attorney Jacqueline Kasulis said. At least one of the items was sold after the auction house was contacted by law enforcement officials. Daniel Kestenbaum, chairman of the house, which specializes in Judaica, said the seller rescued, quote-unquote, the artifacts after they were tragically abandoned in Soviet bloc countries. He said the auction house supports the federal authorities' efforts to resolve this meta-historical problem. Indeed. For the first time ever, the Olympic Games held a moment of silence during the opening ceremony for the 11 Israeli athletes murdered in the Munich Olympics back in 1972. As some of you remember, the Palestinian terrorist group Black September invaded the Munich Olympic Village, holding members of the Israeli Olympic team hostage, ultimately killing six coaches and five athletes, as well as a West German police officer who participated in an unsuccessful raid that tried to free the hostage athletes. At the time, Avery Brundage, the American who was the longtime leader of the International Olympic Committee and an anti-Semite, refused to halt the games in memory of the murdered athletes and coaches, and refused to consider any memorials to them for years after. Anki Spitzer and Ilana Romano, widows of two of the murdered athletes, have long advocated for the IOC to acknowledge the massacre in the opening or closing ceremony. But the Olympic Committee has never before heeded the call, suggesting that honoring the Israeli athletes could be divisive. We must consider what this could do to other members of the delegations that are hostile to Israel, a committee member said in 2004 when a small memorial was held at the Israeli ambassador's house in Athens before the Olympics there. In 2012, ahead of the London Olympics, the IOC rejected an international campaign for a moment of silence. The opening ceremony is an atmosphere that isn't fit to remember such tragic events, said Jacques Raji, the leader of the IOC. Ahead of the 2016 Rio Olympics, the first official Olympic ceremony was held to honor the victims, but not during the opening ceremonies, instead 2 days before. Now, a year away from the 50th anniversary of the murderous Palestinian terror attack, the Olympics finally held a moment of silence. The event, which had not been previously announced, came a day after the opening ceremony's creative director was fired over a Holocaust joke he made back in the 90s. In other Olympic news, Israel, which has its largest Olympics team in history, got its first medal of the Tokyo Olympics as Avishag Semberg won the bronze in Taekwondo. Lilia Akhimova, a Russian-Jewish gymnast competing in her first Olympics, shone on the vault, her specialty, earning a top score among the 24 competitors in the all-around and helping propel the Russian Olympic Committee, you know, Team Russia, to a gold medal. Jessica Fox, a Jewish kayaker for Australia, won bronze in one of her events, her third Olympic medal over the past three games. She has a chance for another. In less good news from the Olympics, two judo competitors from Sudan and Algeria refused to compete against Israeli opponents and were disqualified. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Melina Saval has worked in Hollywood for, I don't want to mention how many years, but an experienced screenwriter. She is the features editor for Variety, which I don't know if it's still the Bible of the industry, but sure seems like it. And we're talking about the way that Jews are, I want to say handled, but that's of course completely wrong. Your article is called Too Jewish for Hollywood, about how Hollywood caricatures Jews, its hypocrisy in treating a minority in a way that they would never treat any other minority. But, and the argument, and you start your article with this, is that, well, Jews founded Hollywood, right? All of the original creators of Hollywood, Sam Goldwyn, Louis B. Mayer, Fox, everybody involved was Jewish, or more or less. So how could it possibly be anti-Semitic?
Well, I mean, one thing I do want to say is, you know, I want to be fair to all, I guess, slighted minority groups. You know, I think something similar happens with indigenous and Native American communities as well. For
of course.
The longest time, they were played by, you know, Mexicans or, you know,
or Italians
or Italians,
Hungarians,
right?
So, or somebody who Hungarians. Looks worthy, right?
Yeah. So there's definitely a couple of groups that are still kind of facing this. But why, you know, to your question, why, how could an industry that was founded by Jews be anti-Semitic? I mean, it's I don't have all the answers. It's such a, you know, it's such a complicated topic. There's lots of reasons. I think that, you can be Jewish and yet not want to be so overtly Jewish, because you're also in an environment in which you're encouraged to not be so Jewish. When these founding people, when they founded Hollywood, their main, you know, they wanted to assimilate. They weren't allowed in other professions necessarily. So their whole goal, you know, back in the day was, you know, to assimilate, to become one with everybody else. So the goal wasn't to be overtly Jewish on film. It was to blend in. I can only speak from personal experience, and I just, sometimes it is actually the Jewish creators behind making the content that are the most nervous about coming forward and being, you know, quote unquote, too Jewish. You don't, there's like a fear there. There's an embarrassment. There's not being uncomfortable with it. You know, I think that there's a lot of reasons. Everybody has their own reason, but I just know personally, I've been discouraged by people making mainstream content, you know, that it's just not a good idea. It doesn't sell. It doesn't appeal to middle America. It's just not something you really want to do. So, you know, there's myriad reasons, but I think a lot of them is, you know, I wouldn't say self-hatred, because I think that that's really intense, and I don't want to put that label and take somebody's inventory, but it's the sense of feeling really uncomfortable and maybe an underlying fear about being a little bit too open with one's Judaism. And also just from a business perspective, you know, constantly being told that this is not what American audiences want to see.
I was particularly struck in your article about the kind of weird covert anti-Semitism, that when there are these prominent Jewish characters, they're very typically played by non-Jews. It's not like there's a shortage of Jewish actors in Hollywood. And nobody says anything about that. When Gal Gadot was going to play Cleopatra, people went nuts because she wasn't, I guess, a woman of color, which is kind of funny because Cleopatra was Macedonian.
Right.
And yet any Jewish character, and some of them, by the way, like Rachel Brosnahan, is fantastic as Mrs. Maisel, but she's not Jewish. Nobody objects to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, nobody's saying that these actors, you know, aren't talented. Nobody's saying that, you know, Helen Mirren, who's exceptionally talented and whom I love, is not talented. She's incredibly talented. I love Helen Mirren, and she's playing Golda Meir. I think it's just, you know, if you are Jewish, you know, you see, I mean, you know, I think of Helen Mirren, and she's actually, you know, she's a beautiful, gorgeous, accomplished woman, you know, that hails from, you know, Russian nobility, I think, on her father's side. And
right.
Then you think of, you
yeah,
know,
like white Russian or something, like the opposite of Jewish.
Right, white Russian, not Russian Jewish. And then, yeah, and yeah. Then you think of Golda Meir, a woman who literally, herself.
Bess Meyerson from Milwaukee, whose family couldn't have been more Polish if they tried, right? Polish
right.
Jewish.
I mean, this is a woman who, you know, David Ben-Gurion, like, said, you know, that she would called her, you know, she was the toughest man in government. You
yeah.
know, this is not a woman that was known for her beauty. And she actually used that to her advantage. She considered her lack of beauty a political asset. So it's just, you know, it's a very glaring kind of casting decision. It's just when it happens all the time. It's not that there always needs to be a Jewish actress playing a Jewish or actor playing a Jewish character. But it happens so often, all, you know, that at least, you know, it's hard not to notice it. And it's hard not to wonder why they could not have made this character. Why can't she be played by a Jewish actor? Like, why not? Someone who understands the character. I mean, there's, you know, it's not just hyperbolic characterization of Jews. It's the hypocrisy in terms of casting.
You raised that point. I mean, in Mank, which was, you know, an excellent film, or I guess, I don't know, what would you call it, a limited series. What do they call these anymore?
No, it was a film. It was a biopic. I mean, I personally, this has nothing to do with the Jewish content or not. I wasn't a huge fan of the film.
That's okay. Yeah.
For various artistic reasons. I think it failed on many levels, just and artistically, but you know, the cinematography was gorgeous, but that aside, it's a film.
And Gary Oldman got an Oscar for portraying Mank, who was a very Jewish screenwriter. Oldman obviously not Jewish, and in fact has been kind of
he was nominated. He didn't win.
Sorry, he was nominated. Yeah, right. He was one of the people who sort of was whitewashing. What's the right term? Forgiving Mel Gibson's anti-Semitism and saying, you know, the Jews should just get over it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. He said people should just get over what Mel Gibson said, and then here he is playing, you know, one of the most famous Jewish screenwriters in Hollywood history.
Now, the truth is, there are lots of decision makers in Hollywood who are Jewish, right? I mean,
But there's not any more. I mean, you know, I think I mentioned that too. You know, I mean, Jews make up such a tiny percentage of the world, and the film industry, you know, it employs millions and millions and millions of people. This whole kind of antiquated trope that Jews control Hollywood, I mean, it's just completely baseless. So, yeah, there are Jews working in Hollywood. There are, you know, Hispanic people working in Hollywood. There are Black people working in Hollywood. There are, you know,
there are white people working in Hollywood.
There's white people. There's a lot of white men working in Hollywood. So, sure. Yeah, there are Jewish people working in Hollywood. There's lots of other people working in Hollywood, too. I tried to get exact numbers, but it's really, really difficult to get exact numbers. But at the same time, there are a lot of decision makers in Hollywood that, I don't know if this particular issue is something that people that aren't Jewish really think about. I don't even know if it's been brought to their attention. I have no idea if it's something that they just haven't noticed, or they're noticing and ignoring, or, you know, it's hard to say.
Got a question. You remember there was an Oscars ceremony some years back when Christoph Waltz was nominated for, I think, Best Supporting Actor. I think he won it. And Steve Martin got up and said, you know, Christoph Waltz is nominated for, he's standing in front of a huge crowd back in the days, which, again, we'll get to, in which there's a big crowd for the Oscars. And he said he played, a guy who was hunting Jews. Christoph, look around, the mother load, you know, and looking around the room, because obviously there's lots of Jews in Hollywood. But that doesn't mean those Jews are necessarily committed to their identity, that they're doing anything Jewish, you know, with their kids, that they belong to synagogues, that they do stuff, right? As someone who's an active, involved Jew, does that set you apart sometimes in Hollywood?
I mean, like I said, let me see, how can I phrase this? I don't generally walk around and ask people their particular involvement with their Judaism. I think that's a really personal thing. I know Jews, I know lots of Jewish people that their level of observance is less than mine. I know Jewish people in Hollywood whose level of observance is, you know, stricter than mine. So, you know, that's not really the issue.
Sure.
You know, I mean, obviously Mayim Ba'alek is a really great example. She's very proudly. Yeah.
And by the way, a past guest of Too Jewish, I have to throw in.
Right. I mean, she's wonderful. She's progressive. Great. She's delightful. Also very proudly Jewish. She's
brilliant. She's a lot of great stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, she's amazing. It's, you know, but I think that, you know, what you said about, you know, Steve Martin, again, whom I love, it's jokes like that I think, you know, they're not helpful. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not helpful.
No, they're really not.
you know, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is obviously an incredibly popular show, and Rachel Brosnahan is a wonderful actress. You know, there's so much about that show in which the Judaism is about, you know, it's caricatured in so many ways. There's, you know, the emphasis on the money spent on the wedding and, you know,
the outfits, the clothing.
The outfit. Right. And it just, you know, falls back on all of those stereotypical anti-Semitic tropes, you know, and it might seem very casual and not that big of a deal, but when you add them all up, I mean, that's what people who aren't Jewish, that's how they're seeing Judaism and Jewish culture represented on TV.
Yeah, and you make this point, and I for a while it seemed to me that Woody Allen could not make a movie in which he didn't turn into a Hasidic rabbi at a non-Jew's table. Right. You know, he had the caricature.
Oh, well, that scene in Chippewa Falls and Annie Hall. Yeah,
it's just painful. It's in at least two, maybe three of his movies. He does that. You know, that kind of stereotypical, uncomfortable, really anti-Semitic trope created by Jewish filmmakers sometimes. Is there a solution here, maybe, just to say, look, if you're going to cast somebody for a really prominent Jewish part, maybe you should consider a Jewish actor?
I think that'd be really nice. I think that'd be a great step. And I think also, you know, just the simple matter of Jewish content in, you know, films in which people are just kind of living a Jewish life without the hype, you know, the hyperbole, and
without the stereotyping.
Without the stereotype. Yeah.
You know, it's so funny that you make a point. I mean, Shtisel couldn't be a more Jewish show, and yet it's a universal show. It doesn't really go for the stereotyping, even though it's got ultra-Orthodox characters.
Well, I think, you know, I just realized, like, I think a good answer to your question is nuance. The solution is nuance. Like, the reason that Shtisel works, and the reason that Shtisel is such a hit in places all over the world and amongst people that are not Jewish, is because it's a very nuanced show in which there's lots of humor, but it's very subtle. There's nothing over the top about that show. It's very natural and organic. And, you know, it reflects better than most other shows that I've seen in which there are Jewish characters.
I want to thank Melina Saval for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you, see your work? By the way, if you haven't read the article, it's everywhere. Too Jewish for Hollywood. As anti-Semitism soars, Hollywood should address its enduring hypocrisy and hyperbolic caricatures of Jews. So read it. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Let's see. Variety.com. You can just type in my name. You can see all my articles. You can Google me. I'm on Twitter at Melina Saval. Instagram at Melina Saval. Those are some places. Amazon, my book, The Secret Lives of Boys, Inside the Raw Emotional World of Male Teens. That's up there. I'm pretty easy to find.
Thank you so much, Melina. And we're glad we found you. And I don't think you're too Jewish. I just have to, you know, throw that in.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish for this 19th anniversary edition with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be the dynamic Rabbi David Ingber, founder and senior rabbi of Romamu, a remarkable and influential congregation in New York City. Our play out this morning for our 19th anniversary of Too Jewish is the conclusion of cantor David Kusevitsky's rendition of Meir Machtenberg's Shehecheyanu, the prayer that celebrates all good accomplishments. Don't forget,
Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services and an Oneg Shabbat, all starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services and Torah reading. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of health and of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.